This is the intersection of assistive, educational, and information technology. Whether it's technology for inclusive classroom learning or tools for community success, technology can promote independence, and inclusive technology has become more available for everyone. Welcome to the Inclusive Technology for All podcast with your host, Mike Murata.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to this special episode of Inclusive Technology for All. I know it's been a while since I put out an episode. I've been kind of working through some projects that had some tight deadlines, so I kind of put the podcast on hold for a little bit. But I am back today. I think it's important. I was part of a assistive technology town hall this afternoon. Today is March 16th, 2020. And I thought I would take the audio and post it up here so people could listen to it. It was a live webinar hosted via Zoom with a panel of AT practitioners, including Chris Bouguet, Jennifer Edge Savage, Karen Janowski, Luis Perez, and Kelly Suiting. So I thought I would post it up here. It's pretty long, so be ready. It's about an hour, but hopefully you find this information helpful. It's about COVID-19. The title of the town hall was COVID-19, School Closures and AT. What do we do? We had a really great conversation. I don't know if we came up with many answers, but we came up with a lot of questions. And in fact, we're going to talk about doing this multiple times, maybe make this more of a weekly or a bi-weekly event. So stay tuned for that. I'll post it up on some social media. So keep an eye out. Thanks. Enjoy. Okay. Hello, everybody. Glad you could join us today. If you were on the call before I started the recording, you heard we were already chatting about it. And I think this will be a very loose conversation with a little structure, but not much. We're calling this an AT town hall. I honestly don't know what else to call it besides that. So that becomes the de facto name for something like this. We are hosting this through the Richard West Assistive Technology Advocacy Center, and that's me. I'm the director of the center there. I'm glad people are with us. Hopefully, a lot of people are going to listen to the recording afterwards. We have a great group of people with us today. Give you a sense of who our panel members are. This also does not eliminate anybody else who's on the call right now, who was on the webinar, can certainly join in. I don't know if Chris made it. Chris gave me a warning yesterday that school might interfere.
I'm here.
Yay. Oh, Chris, I didn't see. Okay, cool. So Chris, Kelly, you here?
Hey, I'm here.
Okay, cool. So there you go. Everybody who's on the slide is actually here right now, which is wonderful. Would you guys on the official panel, would you like to take 2 seconds and introduce yourself to the group? He says is less of a question and more of a statement. And I'll go alphabetical. Chris, you want to say hey first?
Sure. Hi, everybody. My name is Chris Bouguet, and I am the Assistive Technology Specialist for Loudoun County Public Schools, where I am work right now. I'm on lunch because I'm at the admin building. We're working and trying to make distance learning thing happen for everybody in an accessible way.
Awesome. Thanks, Chris. Jen?
Hi, I'm Jennifer Edge Savage. I'm an occupational therapist and I'm an assistive technology consultant and I teach assistive technology at Simmons University. I wear a lot of different hats and support some state grants in New Hampshire and Massachusetts. And I also work with PRC Sotillo supporting AC devices as well.
Thank you. And Karen?
And I'm Karen Janowski, and I'm an assistive technology consultant in Massachusetts, and very excited to participate in this conversation because what we are dealing with is so unprecedented, and it's evolving as we speak.
Yeah, for sure. Luis?
Hey, everybody. I'm Luis Perez. I'm currently a technical assistant specialist for the National Center on Accessible Educational Materials at CAST. However, for the purposes of this call, I'm just here representing myself as an independent digital accessibility consultant.
Perfect. Thank you. And Kelly.
Hi there. So I'm Kelly Suiting. I work for the Patents Project in Indiana, and I specialize in autism-specific learning disabilities, Google Chrome accessibility, and then the integration of accessible educational materials and assistive technology.
Awesome. Thank you. And to give everybody on this slide some quick props, this all came together like Friday in the afternoon, and everybody was very willing to participate and give of their time. So I do appreciate that for sure. I want that to be out there first. And like I said to everybody who's on the panel, I said to everybody on Friday, I could envision this being part one of many conversations we have about this, but at least it was nice to kind of get a start. I think hit it in the beginning, and then as this continues to evolve, I think the conversation will continue to evolve. So I appreciate everybody spending their time. And Chris, if you got a bail, I think Chris might be the only one in a school officially right this second. Hmm. Kelly, you're not in a school, are you?
No, I am not.
Okay, so Chris, if you got a bail at some point, just give us a quick I'm out of here and do something dramatic, and then you can bail out.
I do appreciate that, Mike, because at any minute people have been it's been a very whirlwind last couple of days and weekend with lots of questions being fired off. So people know where I am. They might barge in any moment and go, hey, Chris, we need you. So
yeah.
In fact, I just got off a call where I did a Google Meet training for pretty much everybody in our special ed department to let them know that that's a tool that's available for people.
Awesome. Great. And I think we're going to get to that pretty quick in these little questions that lead us on this road as we go through. But everybody who's in the webinar with us right now, feel free. If you have questions, very specific questions, you can drop them into the chat. If you wait for a pause, you might be able to actually turn your microphone and yell it out. But we want to hear from you guys. We are definitely not, I'm going to speak for the whole group here because I feel like I know the group enough. We are not positioning ourselves as having the answers. I think we could have some suggestions, and I think as a group, we'll have a lot of suggestions. So please feel free. We'd love to hear your experiences and your strategies and your ideas. With that said, I did start, and again, I did this mostly for myself last week, and then I was like, well, why not just put it out there for everybody? I had started collecting resources that I saw online into a Google Doc, and then I opened the Google Doc up for everybody to access. And add things to. So that Google Doc is wide open. Everybody has editing rights to it. It's at that bit.ly there. It's bit.ly/remote access4all. Remote access for all. And it's a Google Doc with a ton of resources there that just keeps growing. Thanks, Louise, for dropping it in there. So feel free. Refer to that as we go. Add things in there. It's wonderful. It's been really nice watching that grow over the weekend. All right, so here's my thought. Here's our roadmap for the next 50 minutes or so. Remote instruction, accessible materials, access to AT, access to related services, and then supporting other educators. Rebecca, I saw your comment in the chat, and as soon as someone starts talking, I'll copy the actual Google Doc link and drop it in there so you guys have it. So if you can't get to a bit.ly. Oh, Kelly, thank you. Kelly led in for us. Awesome. All right, so there. This came the other day. I got this piece of information, and I wanted to throw it out as a starter of the conversation because I think what precipitated this conversation was our fear that as schools try to ramp up quickly, and sometimes very quickly in like 2 days, to providing remote instruction, I feel like for some of them, the last thing that they're thinking about is accessibility for all students. And so this came from OSEP, put out this guidance the other day about what needs to be provided to everyone. And I think it's really interesting, but it leaves a little question there for me as I look at it. So they talk about if a local education agency closes schools and does not provide any educational services to the general population, then they would not be required to provide services to students. But if the LEA continues to provide educational opportunities, they have to include the provision of FAPE with that. And so I would say to people in the group, if my school turns around and provides packets for students to learn and distance learning and remote learning opportunities, they are providing educational services still. Agreed?
Agreed.
Agreed.
But
definitely agree.
Yeah.
But it seems so inconsistent. So it might be one teacher in one grade level and that might be it. So the consistency, I think, is one of the things we need to discuss.
Yeah, I think it's interesting, Karen. And I was talking to Jen earlier. We were on a call about another grant that kind of snowballed out of control today because of the changing things here. And we were talking about this idea that in my personal district, which I won't say it out loud, you could hunt it down if you wanted to, but I won't say what it is. The younger grades are receiving packets of materials they have to finish. Let's forget accessibility for a second. Let's put that to the side for 1 second. So K to eight, you get a packet of information per week that's going to give you your learning experience. And then the high school kids are all getting instruction through Google Classroom. And so there is a kind of a different way they're providing it. But to me, that is definitely them providing educational service. Mm-hmm. And no, you know, I don't know what that looks like. How does that packet look to someone with a reading disability?
I think this really, I mean, we've all talked about this. This is just almost an opportunity to really expose areas where we have so much work to do that we've all involved with AT have been talking about, but gaps in competency with technology for our educators who need support, gaps in digital equity. There's so much talk about even access to the internet for some of our kids. I mean, it's a troubling time, but wow, it's really exciting to try to figure out, yeah, that packet of information is not accessible to most of our kids.
Right.
The other question with that packet is it a meaningful educational experience, or are we just sending a bunch of worksheets home?
Right.
So does it rise to the level of equivalent experience?
Yeah, I think for sure. And Maureen mentioned ESL issues and those kinds of pieces that, right, what is that packet meant to accomplish? And what does that look like?
So Mike, is that the directive from your superintendent, from administration, that they are responsible to send something home for their students? Because I'm not hearing that that is something that is happening here in Massachusetts. I think it is sporadic, and I think it is at the discretion of an individual teacher who feels responsible for their classroom of students. But yeah,
What I get the impression of, and again, I'm hearing this secondhand as I stand at a socially acceptable distance from my neighbor on our front grass, because he has a student in district still. I do not anymore. And so it sounds like the district took a day last week for everybody to come together and plan. And it does sound like this is a district-wide initiative, that's what they decided to do.
It seems like you're right, Karen, like every district is building this plane while flying it. I mean, just the conversations over the weekend, some are getting packets, some are going to dump some online curriculum that may or may not be accessible or meaningful to folks. Some are, it's up to individual teachers. It's everybody is desperately grasping, trying to figure this out. And everybody has a different story. I love seeing some of the plans that, okay, everybody in Boston Public Schools is going to get a Chromebook as a start, but that's not true across from, you know, I could just drive to another district and it's a very different story.
Right. So that goes back to that digital divide part that you were saying before, Jen, this idea of, you know, it's, do we have access to Wi-Fi? Do I have access to technology? Do I have access, which is where my thought goes pretty quickly, to a support system around me at home to help me manage that technology piece.
And that's another piece. I mean, you know, just, it's tough having every school district individually decide whether or not school is happening. It was a lot more helpful to have a state mandate saying, this is what we're going to do. But we don't appear to have that for how we're going to support our students yet.
So in the chat, it looks like several districts are having teachers create paper packets of information or of assignments, which is a huge issue. Again, for some students, they do better with paper, but many others, especially those of the students with whom we work on IEPs, students learner variabilities, paper does not work. And that is when we really need to have an influence in the classroom about technology solutions that can reach all learners.
Right. Yeah. And I'm wondering, a lot of those packets, I'm sure, start out as digital materials anyway. So, why not provide both, right?
Absolutely.
Provide, send out the materials with, you know, the cover page has information about where you can access the digital version as well if you need that.
Yeah. That's a simple and not always so obvious solution. You're right. It wasn't started, you know, wasn't written on a rock with chalk. Like, it was digital originally. So can they get access to the digital version as well as the paper would be huge.
Yeah. I think as a group, it might be meaningful just based on that conversation is that at this point, a lot of schools have already sent those packets. So what can we do now at this point? So maybe as a group that we can create something for just information on, okay, if you have packets, then how can we attempt to make that as accessible as possible?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a great point, Kelly. And that goes to that support system piece that I kept thinking about with tech. If the packets already landed at my house, I purposely am thinking of a student that I worked with just last week, that he gets paper during the day, but him and his para have a system of working through it to make it digital, and he's working to do this independently. I don't know if he has the skills to do this himself once he gets home, and I don't think this training is carried over to the parents yet, because it's a system that's being worked on right now, and it's still in process. And so how do we make sure people understand that? And in fact, for him, I'm thinking about creating a quick little video of the steps of the process that we just went over on Wednesday when I saw him, just to kind of give an idea of what he should be doing, because I'm afraid he's not going to be able to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, so, even if we could start, like, even volunteering time, this may sound like really outrageous, but even an hour a day, if we can make ourselves available via Zoom or some platform where educators or parents or students can even, like, contact us, say, okay, you have a packet, how do I do this? So then they're getting like that kind of live feedback, and we can just work like on the spot.
That might be a really good idea. Like, do we start creating kind of just-in-time videos? Okay, you've gotten a packet. What can you do? Here are, like, you know, a handful of tools or ideas to address it, whether it's live or recorded, because I'm sure we're going to get very similar questions from all of these districts.
Yeah. And I think, like, anybody using tech, right, the questions will start somewhat broad and they'll be very similar. And then what happens with tech always, it gets very specialized into how that one person is using it and where that one person is struggling. So I think I could see kind of a both of this, where we could have this kind of general tutorials, but then maybe I like that idea, Kelly, this kind of just open
instructor is it AT support is in and kind of thing that we could take turns manning or something.
Yeah. And it's funny because Jen and I just had this conversation about a grant that we're doing. We were supposed to have a training tomorrow for a training we do in New Hampshire. We were supposed to have a live training that 10 days ago we converted to an online training all day. And then just this morning converted it to we're going to hold off for a little while. Because it was going to be live online and we're going to try to find a way to support them. And one of the ways is later this week, we're just going to set up instructor hours, like a professor would be in their office. And if you want to pop by, great, pop by. We'll be there.
It seems like this AT open office hours is getting some momentum here. This AT demand idea sounds okay, guys. We could be doing some volunteering and be recruiting others. Kelly, you get to run it.
Oh my goodness, what have I done?
I think the other point goes back to something Louise said in the very beginning about the quality of the work that is being done at home. And so I think we always want to ask, what is it our students are being asked to do? And is it, you know, is there value in the paper packets? And are there other things that they could be doing instead that will expand their learning? And, you know, journaling as an example, and photographing things. I know one of the things that they're doing in our community, and I think this is a Facebook idea, and it has nothing to do with accessibility, but it's something that every student can participate in, is every day they're having people in neighborhoods put a picture, like for today it's shamrocks in honor of St. Pat's Day, tomorrow, and tomorrow it's a snow, you know, whatever, flowers. So people are printing these up and putting them in their windows so that as families walk around their neighborhoods, so they're still social distancing. But at least now they're getting out there. They can be chronicling then. They can be doing math and how many houses in this neighborhood. I mean, there's so many different ways. And it doesn't matter what your ability is. And again, if it's someone with low vision or vision issues, then somebody else in the family can report it. But this is something even our students with mobility issues in wheelchairs can still participate in something like this.
This might help change the use of the worksheet in the future if we can show how much we can do in other ways, Karen, right?
Well, and just balancing screen time as well, because, you know, even households that have a device, it could be that mom and dad or, you know, other members of the household are working from home, right, and are taxing, really putting a big tax on that connection and the time when people are able to use the device. So balancing it with no screen activities, and Karen, you mentioned a few excellent ones that, get you out and exploring your community in a way that's safe and maintaining that social distance is really important as well.
Yeah, I think we also need to consider the kiddos who live in very rural areas. I know in my community, you know, there are no neighbors, you know, but at the same time, so how can we utilize those resources like mail delivery service? Can we, and again, this may sound outrageous, but I'm all about it because you never know what can come out of it. Mail service, putting something like Karen was talking about to engage some pieces of that instruction. Or I know that a lot of bus routes are now delivering meals to students. So how can we use that as some way for academics, for engagement piece to eliminate that screen time? And I do want to give a shout out to Katie Novak. If you follow her on Twitter, and if you don't, you need to. She's started posting, as of today, lessons each day that are incorporating Universal Design for Learning, and it's all set up in a Google Doc for what she's doing with her own kids at home, and it's really wonderful.
My own town that I live in, all the moms, we have our Facebook group, and now it has turned into what are we doing to support our kids academically group. And the ideas that are being shared through social media are just beautiful. Like, how do we get those little, you know, get folks connecting and sharing what they're doing to support their kids during this time, I think is great.
Yeah, so Cheryl, her name was Katie Novak. Oh, thank you, Maureen, to follow her. I also saw something yesterday on Twitter, and I gotta tell you, this might be a great plug, and I'm sure I'll do it a bunch of times, a great plug for being a connected educator. And if you're not yet, this might be your moment to dive in. Because just in the past few days, I've seen tons of ideas on Twitter, and I just keep screenshotting them or I email it to myself. And that's how I've been creating that document that I started. It was just all these great ideas that I saw. One of them was from Chris Woods, and he's on Twitter at @DailyStem. And it was 77 simple STEM activities for families. And it was really great because a lot of these were about things you could do around your house that have value, that have learning value. And I thought this would fit nicely into some of the conversation we were just having about different activities that we could get our students doing.
One of the things I got on from online, yeah, absolutely, Mike, make the plug for social media for us. One of the things that I learned about was a teacher had created, the autism educator who writes a blog, had created a social story to help explain the coronavirus to students on the autism spectrum. So I put that link in the Google Doc that you have crowdsourced, because that's, again, you know, how do we meet the needs of our learners who with different variabilities and may not be understanding? So a social story is already created that can be shared.
That's awesome.
I put a link in the share doc with all of the crowdsource resources that there are some really, really great things out there. Social stories, so many that have already been created, just activities. So I've really appreciated Twitter even more at this moment.
Jennifer, not Jennifer, this Jennifer, but Jennifer, I'm going to butcher your name, Shubring. I hope I got that right. But thank you for just continuing to remind us about the digital equity concern.
Yeah.
And that, you know, often we think about just having access to devices or not, but we also have to consider different situations that people find themselves in, whether it's, you know, two parents that are working several jobs or whatever it may be. We need to be sensitive to that variability as well.
Yeah. And I think that that fits into this idea of that, of where I think of it as a equity issue, as that support system and whatever that looks like around that student. And I think that support system will be as fluid in the next couple of weeks as all these other issues, whether people are at home or they're not at home and what that looks like and other responsibilities. Even if it's people working from home who have never worked from home now, they also have to navigate those waters a bit. So having the extra responsibility of making sure that they can support their student or their child as a student is one extra kind of weight that it has put on them at this point.
Right. That whole equity thing. I mean, maybe we have two working parents at home trying to work from home, not really available to provide the support. And then we have other kids who actually they're home alone now.
Yeah.
Because parents are still working. And this is going to be a real need to rely on local teams and identifying the kids who need support, having nothing to do with technology.
Yeah, I think so too.
So what does that look like? Let's just try to even get it started somehow.
Yeah, so what does it look like? Luis, this slide that I have up was the cue because of what you said to me earlier today. Do you want to throw some suggestions out there or some strategies out there for people to start the ball?
So just to start the ball, I think it's important in a situation like this, communication is one of the most important assets that we have, you know, making sure that people are in the loop that need to be in the loop, making sure that you're relying on the systems that are already set up. So that's the reason why I share the AIM state context. Mm-hmm. So this is the list that we maintain on the AIM Center website that's updated regularly. And it has the important people in your state that, you know, have the most relevant information for your given state, because each state does things differently. So I want to suggest that you bookmark that list and have that person as an important contact that you can reach out to with questions. Because of course we provide general guidance, you know, on the AIM Center website, but I think this list would be a good place to have as a bookmark.
Yeah, I think so too. I think that's huge. Anybody else want to provide a quick little strategy or idea for accessible materials?
Well, I think one of the things too with digital equity and what most people do have telephones. And again, I understand that it does use up their data, but making things accessible is possible using tools like Office Lens and Seeing AI and Google Keep, which are all free. Right. So I think that those are things that we want people to be aware of. They are free resources. They can work with an iPad or a phone.
So yeah, and I would say, you know, I shared Office Lens in the chat. Let's try to think of tools that will work across platforms as well.
Exactly.
We have no idea what they're going to have at home. We have no idea how old it is too. So we want to keep that in mind that, you know, the latest and greatest would be nice in a great situation, but it may not work. You know, so we want to keep that in mind as well. The other thing that I was going to say is you're going to see a lot of lists of tools being shared online and in different forums. To me, there's a couple of things that we can do to make sure that we're not passing along tools that are not accessible. One is the No Mouse Challenge. So the No Mouse Challenge, basically, like it says in the name, and I'll try to find the link and share it in the chat. But if you get a website or a tool, just flip over your mouse and use the tab key on your keyboard and try to tab through and see if you know where you are as you tab through. Because if you can't tell where you are, then AT probably won't be able to tell where it is either.
Yeah.
So just to kind of, it's not an accessibility test really, it's just a quick usability test that you can do to, you know, start to triage some of those tools so that you can focus your attention on the ones that have at least paid attention to basic accessibility.
Exactly. And it's our moment to remind people again about the things that are built in already. Start there. You have things, and I think Louise had a really good point. It's not everybody in their situation is going to have the latest and the greatest, but all the devices we have now have some form of built-in accessibility. And so even having those resources out there for people to say, oh, well, wait a second, I need something read out loud. Maybe my phone does that. And then automatically have them start to think about this idea of what do I have before I have to add new things in. Because a lot of times, chances are high, the things we're proposing to people to try are all going to be new experiences for them. So we're asking people to take on a lot of new learning right now. And so finding a way to pick our moments and give them the biggest bang for their buck for some of these tools is going to be huge.
Well, maybe we can focus on that and start pushing more, a lot more toward the built-in accessibility features. Because I work with a lot of educators, as I'm sure many of you do, that don't realize that the Chromebook, you can turn on, you know, speak, select, and all of those things. So maybe that's something that we could try to raise even more awareness about at this point.
Exactly. Yeah, I think so too. I think it's a great start.
And I know a number of us have, you know, YouTube channels where we share tutorials. So it might be helpful to create a playlist if you have those tutorials that kind of organizes some of those, you know, just specific, like the basic, the most basic ones that would be helpful right away into a nice playlist that can be shared online.
That's a great idea. I'm writing myself a note. Now I have 7 notes from us so far, which is great.
And what are they?
Well, some of them is open webinars for instruction, open hours, how to do that. It's built-in accessibility, playlist of AT tutorials. Those are just a couple.
And by writing them on the list, you mean putting them in Google Keep. Is that, that's what you...
and just because I saw Chris turn his camera on and I haven't turned mine on yet. No, what I mean is... I've written them on these post-it notes that are sitting here next to me.
Yeah, I got my post-it notes too. Hey, I wanted to jump in. I got pulled away, so I apologize if this has already been said. But I feel like what's happening with school districts around the country are them plotting out distance learning opportunities. And I think there are the phases that people are thinking of are, and so I apologize if this has already been said. But so one is, what is a repository of resources that that the community can just access from the school district? And so school districts are scrambling to say, okay, what can we put online for people, not even for new learning, just to support, you know, sort of like an extended summer break. People put materials together and go, hey, don't lose your skills over the summer, do this over the summer. That's what people are doing. And I find that is where we really start with accessibility, is that it's a huge opportunity for when the school districts are putting those materials together to be thinking about, okay, one, UDL, and two, accessibility. So are we making the resources, everybody has to do this, or it's just one medium? Like, here's this YouTube video on how to learn algebra. Well, that's not enough, right? You've got to have maybe multiple means of representation there. To know that you're going to meet different needs that way. And then the second would be, again, with that accessibility piece, is I really like what Kelly and Luis and everyone was saying about the built-in accessibility features. Mm-hmm. The way I think school districts frame that is in that multi-tiered system of support. So what tools do we have available that is just tier one supports that are available to everybody, and those built-in accessibility features really speak to that tier one support. It is usually stuff that's just available to everybody. Right. But I really like the idea that it's on us as a school district to make sure those materials are provided as accessibly as possible before we jump to Office Lens or the grab image text feature of Google Keep, or asking kids to make their stuff accessible for themselves. You know, that, yes, that's more of a tier three approach. Like we tried so desperately to make things accessible, but we failed here on this particular thing, or this particular piece of content. It's so good and it's not accessible. So yes, student, go off and use your own accessibility tools. But I really think it's important to be thinking about it from that lens, that it's on us first. We provide the accessible materials, and then we show kids those things to make them make their things accessible when they find that they're not.
So I, kind of keeping in line with what you said, Chris, I shared a handout that we just prepared, getting started with document accessibility. And the goal is not to make you into an accessibility professional, it's to give you five things you can do on any document to make sure that it's accessible before it goes out the door. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing that I wanted to also mention is, and I think Kelly, you brought this up, that they may be on a mobile device. So be careful with PDF, because PDF is not a great experience on all devices, especially on mobile devices. So the more that we can share resources that are created on the web, like in web native formats, the better it will work across different platforms, whether it's a tablet or a mobile device. So just something to be aware of. You can make PDF accessible, but we probably don't have the time to do it in this situation. And it's also not a great experience anyway, even when it is accessible.
Yeah, that's a great point. I was so happy to see that my school district, again, just kind of stalking them over the weekend is what they're doing. They put together a set of resources for parents, and they made it on a Google site. Simple, quick, easy, and it was all there, and I could see it on any device I had, which was awesome.
So I think in the chat, too, I think people are wanting to move to how do we meet the needs of students with more complex special needs.
Yeah, I saw Jessica's question, yeah.
Communication and, you know.
Here's a couple things real fast, Karen, before we jump over there, because I just saw this on Twitter before we started. People are coming up with creative solutions, and the good and the bad, the good is that they're coming up with them. The bad is that they're telling everybody they're doing it. And these were teachers that were reading books out loud and posting it up on YouTube. And we have to still remind people that that is a copyright infringement. Mm-hmm. It's great because you've done something creative to make it accessible, but it's still not right. And so looking at those different ways, and so this was an author who posted up because people were asking about reading his book and publishing it up on the web. And he asked his publisher, and they said, as long as it was somewhere that only the student you made it for could access it, then it made it okay.
Yeah,
it's just something to think about.
Distribution that way.
Yeah, distribution, yeah.
I want to throw in another, before we move over to that other topic too, I think, and again, I am not sponsored by the company that I'm about to mention, but I feel like there's so many different school districts are already using Google. Grackle is a great tool that could be used. So if you're not familiar with Grackle Docs, what it allows you to do is if you've created something using a Google tool, let's say a Google Doc, you essentially, it's an add-on and an extension, but you hit the little button, the Grackle button, and it checks the accessibility for you, and it tells you step-by-step what to fix. Oh, I didn't add alt tags to my pictures. Oh, I didn't have a title for screen readers. It just tells you what to do step-by-step. So like Luis said, we're not expecting everyone to be suddenly accessibility experts, but this would be a tool that your school district might be looking at to go, well, okay, before we put something out, let's run it through that accessibility checker, and then we can put it out, and that will help people through it. Yes, Luis just wrote in there as well, because I'm rambling. Microsoft has built-in accessibility features as well, and checkers.
Yeah. And Aaron put the link in there. Thank you. I love the crowdsource chat. Thank you, guys. I appreciate it. Mm-hmm. Here was a question I got. Someone sent me this question, and I said I would pose it to the group. And I don't know if anybody has a resource or a suggestion for this person. Knowledge of a good resource for using remote learning for young students with ASD who require this Mod Max assistance to participate in learning. I don't know if anybody has a suggestion we could share with that person.
I'm so worried about this population and getting the support they need.
Well, okay. Let's start the conversation. Here's my first thing. I know that later on tonight, 8 p.m., so I do a podcast called Talking with Tech, and the co-host, Rachel Madel, and I are doing a presentation on doing this sort of stuff, specifically for AAC. But this augmentative and alternative communication, this question is not specific to AAC, but it's sort of close. What we're suggesting we start with, and I know maybe this was already suggested when I left the room, because it is sort of, it makes a lot of sense, I think, to a lot of people, is that there needs to be some sort of routine So a visual schedule here that you follow. Many teachers and students in homes, teachers have worked with parents at home to have a visual schedule, but to stick to a certain routine so that there's an expectation of what happens every day. And then it also, especially this population that this question is speaking for, is about how do we keep the learning going? One of the reasons the visual schedule is so important, is step by step, is it allows students to recognize that an end is in sight. Meaning when you or I or someone sits down to do a job, we usually know that this meeting lasts for an hour and then we're going to get up and we're going to leave that meeting. Well, the same thing for a student is that we're going to play this game for a certain amount of time. We're going to work on this craft for a certain amount of time. We're going to do whatever the learning activity is for a certain amount of time. And then it's going to end and we're going to move on to something else. And having that laid out in a visual format, I think, helps people get into the routine of every day. This is what we do.
Yeah, I think that's a great strategy for sure. And here, as we're kind of thinking about more of these access issues, what do you think about these questions? If one grabs you, jump in. What do you think? So how can we support trials remotely? How do we support students with significant disabilities? And then how can we provide effective remote AT services on a consultative basis?
See, I think part of it is we want to make ourselves available to parents and even screen share or do a Zoom conference or, you know, just be there to help support them and show them some of the things that are possible. Because these are really challenging times. I've had schools reach out to me and ask me, what can we send home? And I want to talk with the parents primarily just to see what are their expectations and how can I support their child in their home? Because every situation is unique and that's the I in the IEP.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're right. I think that some schools I see are doing a nice job about finding ways to take some of their equipment and get it to people if they want it. But then that next part of it, it's like a 1A and 1B. 1B is how do we make sure that once they have it, they can successfully use it for what they need to do.
Yeah, and I think they need to know that we're not leaving them, you know, to figure these things out on their own. We are here to help. So I think part of that online, you know, tech support, not just for teachers, we want to do that online tech support for parents as well.
Yeah, I know for my clients, especially using their devices, like immediately, like we can do a webinar, what works for you, let's get you started and supported, because it could be weeks before they're back in school.
Yeah. Yeah. And at this point, it's going to be weeks.
Yep.
Yeah.
I know something that we're talking about in our neck of the woods, so it's not solidified yet, but as we're bantering around ideas, is to have sort of certain office hours that people could contact. Was this already mentioned?
It was. That's why I laughed, but that's great.
Okay, we're on the right track. Yeah. Well, it's good to know that the nation is thinking that way.
Yeah.
During these times, someone's going to be available to help you for using these different tools, these video conferencing tools.
Yeah. And even with those, one extra piece about that idea of opening up these office hours, give it to people in different formats, because some people might not even be comfortable enough to dial in to the video conferencing to ask their question. So I think we also have to have phone numbers available for them to be able to reach out to as well. Here's another question that came from the group out in the community. This is very specific, so I'm not sure if anybody has an idea on this about the C-Touch Learn. I'm thinking that's an app. I don't even know that one, actually, so I'll leave that if someone has a suggestion.
Yeah, I think this speaks to, there are particular tools that we like to recommend depending on the student's need and what it is we want them to be able to do. And I think that involves the one-to-one coaching that some of our parents will require, and we want to fill in the gap to be able to do that for them.
Yeah, and you can see even with this one, Karen, this has like it's an app, and then it also has some supporting materials that have to work with it.
See, and another app that I keep thinking about for different students with more complex needs is something like the Bitsport app. Right. And again, you know, if we're recommending something specific and somebody mentioned about AT trials, one of the things that's good about that particular app is the ability to do data collection. But again, we don't want to just let parents loose with these things and trying to figure it out on their own, because then they feel abandoned and it's more frustrating.
Yeah, and it also has the potential to, I don't want to say do damage, that seems even harsh. What I mean with it could be potentially counterproductive to the skills a student has already developed at school using it.
Right.
It's tough. And then you get that issue with it's an app, any app that, you know, will solve it. Like we hope that these students have AT solutions in place, but we know the reality is not all of them do.
Right.
This is really going to push that envelope in a painful, but probably good way.
Yeah.
I mean, the reality is we've been recommending these kinds of tools and helping support teachers in their use. And even teachers have had a hard time implementing them. So now we're asking parents to implement them. So that's why it really does speak to, the, you know, how are we going to address those needs of the parents?
Yeah. And Cassandra said in the chat, you know, they're starting to think about sending home iPads with the apps. And it does fall back into that same area of concern as you send somebody home an iPad with these specialized apps on it that they're not familiar with, they might not know where to start, and it might just sit there.
I think a very simple practical tool and maybe reality is that people will put their kids in front of screens more frequently than they have before. And even if they're aware of it, they just might need the break where they're gonna say, we'll turn the screen on now and go with it. So let's assume that's the case. What can we do to help with that is, one, we could help people understand, especially if it's an iPad and you're going to be watching videos on your iPad, even in this sort of passive receptive way, we can turn on the captions. There's auto captioning that can be turned on. So that is at least something like, hey, did you know you can at least provide text with the audio that we're asking the kids to watch? That's a very tier one, you know, desperate thing to say, but at least it's something, you know, so you don't feel like, geez, all my kid is doing is watching videos. Well, okay, at least there's some text that goes along with it.
Yeah.
Also, talking about those videos. So let's give people permission to watch YouTube videos, but with the next caveat being that watch them together and pause them and then talk about them. And let's talk about what you just saw and then go ahead and watch some more and then stop it and pause it and promote this idea that watching videos is not necessarily bad. Watching videos alone might be bad. Right. Watching videos together is together time where you're doing something together, you're having conversations, you're interacting together. That might make people feel a lot less guilty about that screen time that everyone seems to place on people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah, Joy, we have been talking about that issue of equity, and Joy's a biologist added a comment in the chat as well. And David, is your district sending mailers home? Because that is another option. No. So that those who are not connected, you know, how do we get the information out to everybody using a variety of tools? Because that is universal design.
Yeah. Yeah. And thinking about how they do that. And here's one other question. It might be a little off topic for what we're just talking about, but I think it's going to come up at some point. This, again, is a question from a therapist. She asked me this last week when I was at her school. I work in her room. And she said, all right, well, what am I supposed to do? How can a therapist, in this case, she's an OT, how can she replicate her therapy sessions once her students move to a remote learning experience? And that's going to be tricky.
Let's come back to that question and think on it. I want to comment on Joy's, what she wrote about, and this is not the first time that has come up, and it certainly is not the first time it's come up in our neck of the woods, is how do we help kids that don't have internet access? How do we help families just because the utility's not there? So again, I in no way am speaking for my school district. I'll just talk about stuff that I have heard might be happening in the world, is going out and providing those, tapping into funds, and going out and providing those families with MiFi spots, essentially giving them the internet access. And that might not get everybody. It might get just more people that don't have access. But I wonder if that's an option for school districts, is to find that technology and distribute it to people, so that they can have more access.
And I also would add, Chris, you know, reaching out to your business community in your area and see if they, even if they're going to be closed, can they leave their Wi-Fi open? So that if you're, you know, nearby, like your house reaches, some of these places have fairly good connections. Maybe you can still use that connection.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. And also there are some service providers, like Xfinity has opened up all of their community hotspots where you don't have to be an Xfinity customer anymore to access them.
Yes. I think Comcast has something with, it's called the Essentials, right?
Okay.
For $10, right?
Yeah. Again, so a lot of companies are pitching in here trying to help to help with that issue.
I think Spectrum, which is out in the Southwest, is offering free internet services too. So it's something to look at.
And then we also have to think about, there's a lot of communities that just do not have access to internet because it's not possible.
Girl.
So hotspots aren't going to work. So then what does that look like?
Well, and I think that gets to Joy's point, what she was saying, is that it can't be the only solution. Wi-Fi can't be, or internet access can't be the only solution. There has to be a greater scope there. And I know that's what we're talking about again, in no way speaking for my school district, but having both an online place and an offline where people can come and pick up essentially materials that they could, again, we're not necessarily talking about anything new, just to reinforce concepts that they've already been exposed to.
Mm-hmm. I would like to go back to Jessica's question, just to make sure that we either get an answer or start brainstorming a little bit more, just because of several people replied to it, just about the AAC devices.
Yeah.
So if you're in a school district, are some of you, your districts sending home the AAC devices? And if not, what are the alternatives at home? What does that look like for your students?
I know that if it's written in the IEP that it can go home, and it was going home. So most of our kids have access to their AAC at home. The bigger question that we've been wrestling with is, what if it breaks? What's the process look like for getting a repair or replacement or something? Of course, we've always talked about having a low-tech or light-tech alternative that you're using as part of the system. So that is still, you know, we hope we have people set up that way. And I hope people around the country have set up that way. That's optimistic, I know.
Oh, that was a stumper. It stumped everybody.
Yeah, I think, you know, in our situation too, or in the districts that we're in, the student does take the AAC device home because it is their voice, and it is included in the IEP as something that will go home with them.
Yeah.
It's a mix. Some districts, you know, have iPad only support and they don't send the devices home. I know quiet.org actually has, some people have shared their kind of letters signing off to allow devices to go home. I know in the districts I work in, we do send them home. We really fight for those devices to go home, and not just for AAC, just for access. If a student needs a Chromebook in school, they need it at home to do their homework. But that's just not true from district to district or state to state. And maybe this is going to push that to make sure devices are in students' hands rather than collecting dust in a classroom that's closed.
Agreed.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we all agree that should be happening and devices should be going home. It's interesting, as we've seen this shift of our technology, our assistive tech supports become more cloud-based and we have one-to-ones in our schools. I think some of the schools I work with have gotten away from this idea of making sure that students could take technology home if they needed to, because the thought was it was always available on the cloud. And this might come back at this point to catch us, and we might have to rethink some of that. And again, has all of this happened too quickly that those things are not being discussed yet? I don't know. But I think, like Jessica said, we need to be the ones to just keep yelling this out and just keep reminding people, like, hey, don't forget this, or what are we doing here?
and this keeps coming up again and again in the chat, it's like we really do need to have a gazillion different ideas for parents to support them. Paper-based, online, other resources, schedules for them. Because we're all coming at us. Many of us are working with kids, and some of us, you know, really don't have the resources to do that as much as we can provide. And figuring out methods for getting it to them is going to be so important. And who knows what the future is as far as I think about the kids who need significant OT and PT for physical needs and regression. What that's going to look like for getting, you know, getting tested before you work with a child to make sure they get some services. Once we have testing available more globally, I think we're going to, it's going to be coming down the pipeline. Like where, who is it safe to work with? I don't know.
Well, maybe again, looking at the optimistic lens, something that has maybe again, we've been reluctant to do is that there has been this dichotomy between some therapists that do direct service and then those that have moved to more of a consultation model, the idea being that we're going to build capacity. And maybe this will push that needle towards that build capacity model, right? That it's not pull the kid down to my room and do therapy with them. It's more integrated into their daily routine and their environment and coaching the other people around them, including especially now, the family members. Those are usually the only consistent members or people in a kid's life with all the transitions they have. It really begs the argument that you should be working in that consultation sort of model or coaching model.
I love that optimism that you have, Chris, and the idealism. Because isn't that what we want? I mean, any of us who are working in this field, what we care about is building capacity so that we work ourselves out of a job.
Right.
And that might be the silver lining, as you were saying. That would be incredible.
Yeah, this might be one of the times where people are receptive to this idea where maybe they haven't been in the past. This idea of consultative services and support and capacity building. I don't know if people are ready to hear that today. Mm-hmm. But I could definitely see that as coming up as part of our conversations as we go forward. Because I think just who knows what next Monday will look like compared to today. And so I think this conversation, which we started today, and this is me wrapping it up in a very smooth way. I'm trying to be respectful of all your time. I know we're getting close to one. I think this was a good conversation to start. It probably gave us 10 times more questions than answers, but I guess that's okay for right now. We'll continue on this conversation. With that said, there are ways this conversation will keep going. And what we're going to see is, there you go. Now I want to push again, Twitter chats. If you're not on Twitter, get on there. We have Kelly from Pattens is here. They're going to do this topic or something. What do you call them this topic, Kelly?
It's accessibility and remote learning.
Perfect.
For the topic.
That will be, and I have that time right, correct?
That's correct.
Okay, perfect. I'm like, is that the right time? And now that I saw it on the screen, I couldn't be sure. So that's tomorrow night, and use the Pattens ICAM hashtag. We'll talk about that. And then Karen and I have made this the topic for Wednesday night's AT chat as well. So we'll have another opportunity to chat about this. And then if the people on the panel are amenable, maybe we'll continue this and we'll make this a bit of a series. If it fits into people's time and their schedule, maybe we can come together on some fairly regular basis and talk about this. I think that would be really great. No pressure.
And you know, who knows, two more days of this, because we were all thrown into this so suddenly at the end of last week. Two more days, maybe there will be some administrative directives that are coming out that can guide people.
Right.
We'll see where we are tomorrow night for Kelly and Wednesday night for AT Chat.
Yeah, it's
And also, Joy, share the quiet list. It's also a great resource to take advantage of. And there's a link in the chat for you all.
Awesome.
Yeah, and I think just to talk, keep this on a positive note, how we have the entire time is that I appreciate this and how it's gone, because we're not focusing on what's happening and all the things that schools aren't doing, but the resolutions and how we can, like, they have packets. Okay, that's what this looks like now. How can we, you know, transform that into a way that's accessible and opening those conversations. So I do want to say that I do appreciate the positivity and and Joy, you know, saying Chris is so positive is absolutely what we need, because this is where we're at. We have to figure out ways to move forward. We can't just be stuck on the things that has not happened, but how can we make it better and be a learning opportunity for not only us? As you can see, some of these things we're really struggling to find answers to because we do not have them. So this is really important, and I'm so grateful to be asked to be on here, and want to thank every single one of you to being here, because it is absolutely so, so important.
Yes, it was fantastic. And I appreciate everybody's willingness to take my email on Friday afternoon and say yes to it. So I thank you for that. Don't forget, there's the link to that document, and the link to the Google Doc is in the chat as well. So it's bit.ly/remote-access-for-all. And what I'll do is, as soon as we're done with this, I will process the recording and I will drop it up on the ATAC NJ YouTube channel. And I'll put a link out on the quiet list, and I'll put it out through Twitter as well, so people can see the recording. And please share it with anybody you can think of. And then we'll look to find another way to reconvene in the near future.
And one of the things too, Mike, before we end,
go ahead, Karen.
Some people might not realize that this is a possibility, but you have been, all of your words have been captioned. And so we do want to make sure that people are aware of that feature that's built into Google Slides as well as PowerPoint.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's been sure. Pretty good, because Mike has a good microphone. So that's another thing to keep in mind.
But I think
you for noticing,
Louise. All of us. It's worked for all of us.
Yeah. And it was pretty accurate. I have to admit, when I'm not talking and I hear one of you guys talk, I push the mic a little closer to my computer so the speakers can be lower.
Oh, okay.
So I'm doing a lot of movement over here, but that's okay. It's not about me right now. That's okay. All right, guys. Thank you for your time. We appreciate everything. And we will talk again soon.
Thank you.
Bye, everybody. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you so much.